Welcome to the Anti-Failure Podcast. My mission is to share stories of small business owners, managers and entrepreneurs who have embraced failure to help them on their path to success. I'm your host, Chris Kendall, and with me in the studio today is Sean Cousins. Sean is on a journey to help individuals reach their full potential. With an incredible resume of experiences that includes the founding and successful exit of multiple businesses, a swathe of competitive athletic endeavors, which we'll dive into in more detail in a bit, and now a pivot into psychology and mental performance coaching, all before the age of 35. You clearly have something that drives you. Thanks for joining me, Sean. Let's get started with an overview of your journey so far. Tell us your story.
I appreciate you having me on, Chris, and I absolutely love this setting as well. This is amazing year.
Yeah, great.
I suppose an overview, I started in the fitness industry. I was in the fitness industry from a really young age. I actually finished my HSC and did my personal training certificate at the same time. So essentially, as soon as I left school, I went straight into work as a personal trainer. So I was 19 when I got my first job as a personal trainer. And then from there, I ended up staying in the fitness industry up until, I suppose, last year was when I really exited the fitness industry altogether. There's plenty of variations, which I'm sure we can talk about.
Yep.
But my entire career has been around having an impact on people, helping people. That's one of my biggest core values and my biggest passion. And going from the fitness industry to what you said just then, more of the mental approach to it now, that's been my latest transition.
And it's such a hot topic where the learned behaviors impact people's ability to peak perform. Talk a little bit about how you see that, not only in your journey, but how does it apply to the people you're working with?
Well, I suppose it depends on the person that I'm working with, really. Mm-hmm. In the fitness industry, there's lots of parallels between the fitness industry and the mental wellness industry, but they're also very different. So for me, professionally, when you go in the fitness avenue, people come in and I know the answers. If they need to lose weight, if they want to get stronger, if they want to get fitter, I have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Now going into mental performance, when I speak to someone for the first time, I don't know their morals. I don't know their religion. I don't know their upbringing. There's so much more to it that I have to unpack before we can actually start helping them.
Right.
So although there is a lot of parallels between the two, they're also vastly different as well. And that was a big struggle for me going from being the expert in the room to then understanding, okay, I know nothing about this person.
Yep.
I actually have to learn a lot more before I can, you know, offer my services.
Yeah. So you started out in the fitness industry. Somehow you found yourself in Dubai at a young age. Tell us a little bit about how that unfolded and what was your motivation behind it and how did it end?
So I moved to Dubai when I was 20 years of age. I got an opportunity to work over there. Have you been to Dubai?
I have. Okay. Only through the airport, though. I haven't spent any time.
Okay. So I worked on Tiara Palm, which is the man palm.
Yeah,
so Atlantis at the very end. I was got the opportunity to work in, it was half permanent residence and half holidays.
Yep.
So in the permanent residence side, they had a gym down the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I got through a friend. They said, look, you should apply for this job. And I went, yeah, okay.
Why not?
Had a two-hour interview over Skype at the time, and they did these cognitive tests on me, and they were asking me all these strange questions. And at the end of the interview, I just went, oh, I'm never getting that job. I'll never hear from them again. I heard the next day and they said, do you want to start on Monday? This was on a Thursday. And I went, so I told my boss at the time, I said, look, I've just been offered a job in Dubai. And thankfully, Tim Fizik, his name was, and I have to thank him for a lot.
Yeah.
He said, go.
Do it. Nice.
I said, okay. So at 20, I jumped on a plane and flew to Dubai and worked in the permanent residence side of Tiara Palm. And then I suppose that was a massive learning curve for me. Yeah, because culturally, very different.
Very different.
Professionally, the people I was dealing with, very, very high end. So for me, that was a massive change. I grew up in Western Sydney. I just wasn't exposed to that.
Right.
And then I stayed there and the job was incredible and I got a lot of opportunity. But when it came to leaving, I had a bit of a dispute, I suppose, is we had to forfeit our passport when we got employed there. Uh-huh. And I didn't actually understand that at the time and I didn't know the importance of that. Mm-hmm. So they paid for my working visa.
Right.
And a part of that was I forfeited my passport. And at 20 years of age, I had no idea what that meant. So I just gave them my passport. And then when I wanted to leave, I got another opportunity over there working for a private family. I said, look, I want to leave. And they said, well, you can't.
Right.
And I thought, understand. And they said, well, we've paid for a 3-year working visa.
Yep.
You're going to have to work the 3 years unless we won't give you passport back. And
wow.
Yeah. So thankfully, one of my clients over there was a very, very well-renowned lawyer in Dubai.
Yep.
She wrote me a letter. I actually don't know what was in the letter, but I took the letter to my manager and I gave it to her.
Yep.
And she opened it, she read it, and her face went white.
Right.
And she opened the safe and she gave me my passport.
Wow.
And I went, okay. And then I rang the lawyer, my client, Lude Miller.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got my passport. And she had a driver. She said, I'll give you my driver.
Yeah.
I'll take you to the airport, get on the next flight and leave.
Wow.
So the next flight was to Colombo, Sri Lanka. And jumped on the plane and left. And that was my time done in Dubai.
Wow. Yeah. And have you been back since?
No. Funnily enough.
Are you not allowed back? Or?
So I don't know how much truth is in this. And I probably should follow this up. But she wrote me an email saying that there was an arrest warrant in my name for 5 years because I broke working visa restrictions. I asked my lawyer about that. She said, don't worry about it. It's not true.
Interesting.
And I haven't been back until in about 8 weeks' time, I fly back there for the first time.
To connect through to somebody?
Or? Yeah. Oh, yeah, so I'm a little line through to Morocco. So yeah, I think that was one of the biggest catalysts for me being self-employed. That was the last time I ever had a job.
Yep.
And then from losing that control, that was a catalyst that I just said to, I vowed to myself, I'd never be put in that position ever again.
Yeah.
And I planned from then on just being self-employed. And that was the last job that I ever held at 20.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's fascinating. It really set you up for the next stage. You move back to Australia. What happens then?
So I went traveling for a little bit in between. And when I moved back, like I said, I wasn't getting another job. I didn't want a boss. I just wanted to build my own universe and make my own rules, I suppose. So I started a gym. That was when I started my first gym. At the time, I was living in Parramatta. And I started my gym in Warriewood on the North Beaches.
Yep.
And yeah, just thought, look, I'm going to go for it. I was 21. I was led by ignorance. I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
I just knew that I wanted to be close to the ocean. I knew I wanted to leave the area that I grew up in, Western Sydney.
Yeah.
And I just thought if I build it out there, eventually I'll just be able to be out there.
Yeah.
So I built a gym out there called CrossFit Bodie.
Yep.
I named it after Patrick Swayze in Point Break.
Yeah. Bodie. Yeah.
Yeah, it was my dream come true. It was a tiny little warehouse. I filled it with gym equipment. And then I didn't have a member for 4 months and I slept on the gym floor.
It took 4 months to find a member who would come on the journey.
Yeah. And
so in those moments when you're thinking, wow, this is what I want to do, but I'm not getting the feedback that it's something people want to do. How do you push through that to say it'll come?
Look, at 20, 21, I had no idea. I was living my dream with zero clients and zero income. I had my own gym on the Northern Beaches.
Yeah.
It was, I was on top of the world.
Right.
Clients wasn't a massive thing that I was sort of going after.
Mm.
And yeah, so for the first 4 months, the first lady that walked in, her name was Leanne, I'll never forget her. And she walked in and said, what are you doing here? I said, oh, we do fitness classes. And she said, what time's your class? I said, oh, what time do you usually train? She's like, around 3 o'clock. I said, we have a 3 o'clock class. So she came back on later that day and that was my first client. And it was honestly some of the happiest days of my entire life. I was living my dream. It's what I wanted to do. And then obviously that built and I ended up having that gym for 13 years.
Right. And with an increasing focus, I guess, on not just physical well-being, but mental well-being, give us a little insight into how that journey has worked and what have you learned on that way that's helping you be better in the way you approach your job or the way you deliver the service.
Look, a lot of people say that personal trainers have become their psychologist or their counselor. That's what their clients
indirectly
say. Indirectly.
Absolutely.
And I would have, I'm guilty of saying that for the last 10 years that half my job is just being a psychologist
or
a counselor.
I'll give a call out to Drew, my trainer. He's definitely my psychologist as well as my trainer.
Yeah. So it's a very natural progression for a personal trainer, I think. Typically, they love helping people. They love having an impact on people. They're very good at communicating. They're good listeners. Typically, that's what makes a good personal trainer. A lot of that same attributes flow across into being a good counselor or mental performance coach or psychologist.
Yep.
I think for me, if I knew what I knew now, I would have treated my clients for the last 13 years a lot differently.
Is that right?
Yeah. because there is a massive difference. I sort of touched on it before on what a personal trainer should help you with and what a counselor and a psychologist and psychiatrist and should help you with. Okay. There is a bit of gray there.
Yep.
So my natural progression came from just being a personal trainer and caring deeply about my clients to then realizing I need to be more educated on this because I can tell them what exercises to do and what diet to eat, but I can't deal with their problems with their spouse, with, you know, feeling stuck in their life, at crossroads in their careers, and all these things.
But something was calling out in you to help them with those issues, not just the physical.
I deeply wanted to help because what I could see as a personal trainer is helping that was significantly more important than helping them lose weight. And typically they go hand in hand. If we dealt with some of these blockages or barriers or anything that they had psychologically, then the byproduct of that was a fitter, healthier person. So it was natural for me to want to help in that instance, help the overall wellness of the person.
Right.
So it definitely was in me.
And back to that first client, Leanne, what helped you stay the course to get clients beyond Leanne?
I think it was just my passion. I loved what I was doing. And I knew deep down I had a lot of self-belief that what I was offering was good for people. And I just knew it was going to take time. I was young. I had no responsibilities. I was in no rush. It came from a place of passion. It aligned with my core values. It just wasn't hard for me to just keep doing what I was doing. I knew it was going to come. I had an intrinsic belief that it was going to come. I just knew it was going to take time. So,
and how long did it take you to get to that point of sustainability where it was paying you an income, you were doing well, you had a good client base, your reputation's building? How long did that process take?
Honestly, with that, I would say within the first year I had that, it wasn't linear growth, it was exponential. Once I had 1 to 5, 5 turned to 15, 15 turned to 40, 40 turned to 100 quite quickly.
Right.
It was those first few that took the longest.
For sure.
From there, the momentum built. And then, so I would say within a year. Now, I didn't know what I was doing back then. So when you say paying myself a salary, I used to do that, but I didn't know what lodging a BAS was when I was 21 years old. So just any money that I came in, I just took.
Yep.
And it wasn't until my second, third, fourth BAS was overdue that I went, oh, okay, there's some other things.
Yep.
Some other things that I need to attend to here.
Okay, and so let's talk about that. I mean, the first time you get a BAS and it's all this money that needs to be paid out to the government, how did you resolve that disconnect?
I remember both my father and my older brother are self-employed.
Right.
So my dad he's had his business for 30-odd years, and my brother was self-employed from the age of maybe 22 or 23. So they were overlooking everything that I was doing, and I thank them to this day. They they allowed me to make my own mistakes. So they didn't step in and just say, this is... But they were there as a sounding board that when I say, what am I doing here?
Right.
They would then step in.
Yep.
But they didn't helicopter me and they didn't hover over me and say, this is what you must do, which I'm very thankful for, because I think if they did do that, I would have had a feeling of not having full control.
Right.
And it may...
And it was your business and you were going to... You learn from mistakes, right? You learn that the stovetop is hot when you touch it.
Correct. But if someone tells you it's hot, it's different.
Mm.
So I thank them a lot for having that influence on me and allowing me to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you applied some of those learnings in the way you help others?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Without told you so.
Yeah. And especially coming, so my qualifications are in counseling. So with counseling, you use a lot of person-centered approach, which means you genuinely believe that the person has the right answers. So it's not about giving advice and getting this person to understand, look, from where I'm sitting, this is what you should do. It's the worst thing you can do. You need to be able to have the right questioning. You need to have the right techniques, them to come to the realization themselves.
Yeah.
So I was taught that at a very young age. I didn't know I was being taught that at the time.
Right.
And it's come full circle, and now I definitely use that in my practice.
And so... if we look at how you're defining success in your journey, you're an elite athlete, you've started businesses, sold businesses, you're helping others do that. What are some of the key things that you look at to measure your success?
Personally?
Yeah.
Personally, impact, that's a huge one for me.
Yep.
The bigger the impact I can have on people, and not necessarily the most amount of people, have a large impact in a small group of people, that really fulfills me, that I would measure my success off that.
Yeah.
And I suppose my happiness, which is incredibly hard to measure. I don't think there's a way that you can measure it that's very accurate. But when I'm doing something that I know aligns with my beliefs, I know that's when I'm at my happiest. I know that's when people refer to it as flow. Everything feels good. Everything feels like it's going my way.
Right.
It's when I step out of that, that's when I don't feel it as much. So I think I would measure it, my success in life, on the impact I have on others, and also the fulfillment that I'm getting out of whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. Let's switch the focus to a client's perspective, as someone who struggled with my weight my entire life. The journey is often more failures than successes. How do you keep people engaged, knowing what you know about fitness and about nutrition and all? How do you keep that fire alive or motivation for your clients?
I think for my clients, understanding what motivation is. First, people think elite athletes or even fit people just wake up and feel like they're ready to attack the day every single day, no matter what.
Yep.
Which is not true. And the best athletes in the world, the best businessmen in the world, everyone has their bad days.
Yep.
It's motivation is doing the thing you don't want to do. So if you're continuing to do it, that is motivation. You don't have to look forward to it. You don't have to love it.
Yeah.
But if you continue doing it, that's motivation. So I think people would label themselves as, I'm not a very motivated person. But I see plenty of people that say that continue to go to the gym 5 times a week.
Yeah.
That's motivation to me.
But not getting the results. And so in those moments, and it works for me. I know when I go to see Drew, there's something that feels different at the end of the session to what was started. And it's always different.
Yeah.
How do you pass on the skills and techniques that you use in your everyday to help them be better? How do you drive the impact?
So the first thing that I would say to look at is reflect on their lives and figure out what is actually driving them forward. Mm-hmm. What are they trying to achieve?
Yep.
Being very clear on that. So say, for example, let's just use anything as an example. Weight loss is not a very motivating goal. I want to get to
this number. It can be very demotivating.
I would say I agree with that 100%. Getting to X amount of weight, that's your arrival fallacy. When I hit 80 kilos, when I hit 60 kilos, then I'll be happy.
Or when I hit 10 million in revenue.
Then
it's
I'll be
happy.
The
same application in business.
100%.
It's chasing something that will ultimately make me happy, but really the journey is where happiness is.
Yes. And I think in fitness, understanding that is the most important, because if they think that when they get to their key weight, that then they're going to be happy, it's very unmotivating and very disheartening when you get there and you're not happy.
Intrinsically, it means that I must be unhappy now, and that may not necessarily be the case.
Exactly. So I think for me, to get back to answer your question, for me, it's teaching people about the process. So their big audacious outcome goal, we need those things. They're inspiring, they're motivating, they make us feel good. That's our outcome goal. I think speaking to people and getting them to understand the process goals, what are the things, the small actionable steps that you can take week in, week out, that you can tick off that make you feel good, they're the things that you want to spend the vast majority of your time concentrating on. Whereas most people think of the big audacious outcome goal, or the big end point. And then I'm sure we've all had goals in our lives that we've achieved and thought, it didn't make me as happy as I thought. But the process or the journey, that's what I would get people to concentrate on. That's where the magic is.
And do you use those principles in the way you build businesses?
No.
Having the goal.
Is that the wrong answer?
No, not at all. No, it's the parallel though, right? I mean, clearly you know you have a process that you apply to helping others and have impact. What's the opportunity for you to apply those principles in the way that you have impact on yourself? I guess that's the question.
My approach to building businesses has always been about passion. I've never started a business with a end point or outcome goal. It's either to fix one of my own problems or issues or something, a hole that I see that I could actually have an effect on, or how do I have impact on other people? So I've always been very process driven when I'm thinking about businesses. I haven't had that big outcome goal. None of the businesses that I've sold, I thought about building to sell from the get-go.
Right.
It's always been, let's fix this problem, yep, I see a hole here, I think we can do it,
yep,
build the business, mm-hmm, and then the exit has been there, but I never did have that big audacious goal at the end. Yeah. So I was, I suppose to answer your question now that I'm verbalizing it, is mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm, I concentrate a lot on my process mm-hmm, and very little on my outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always taken a similar approach in that my goal is to build a business that's valuable. I don't necessarily focus on the exit, but it'll take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. When you say valuable, financially valuable?
No, it's we're providing a service that clients value.
Okay.
I guess that's my measure for our business is what are we doing to help clients solve problems that we have a way of approaching that nobody else does.
Mm.
And that if I'm focused on delivering value to a client, then the other things sort of take care of themselves.
Yeah, and I think your value is my impact.
Interesting. So can you think of examples where you were faced with something in your control or out of your control that had a devastating impact on your business and you found a way to learn from it or change the way that you were then carrying out your journey to success?
I think this is not an uncommon story, mm-hmm, but COVID,
yep,
for me. So when COVID hit, the first time I ever heard about COVID, we own a ski lodge in Japan.
Right.
And we were sitting in the ski lodge in Japan. And my businesses at the time were international travel, which mm-hmm, was my ski lodge, 90% of our clientele expats, corporate wellness. So we had a mm-hmm, corporate wellness business where we went into offices and we look after their gyms, so their spaces. So yep, we used to offer anything from physio, chiropractic,
yep,
to high-intensity interval classes,
yep,
look after their entire wellness sector, and I had gyms.
Right.
So when COVID hit...
All people facing all...
And overnight, it went to zero. So mm, we didn't have a pandemic clause in any of our contracts because right, why would we mm-hmm, before that? We didn't yep, know what that was.
Yep.
So our corporate contracts went to zero. Mm-hmm. Our international travel... Obviously, Japan was one of the last to open up. So we had our lodge empty for 2 years. We didn't have a single person go there for 2 years. Right. We locked it up in March 2020.
Yep.
And that was it.
Yep.
And then with our local gyms, they were shut. So that was the first real adversity mm-hmm, that I had faced since I left school. Since right, I left school and I was self-employed, the entire world just kept getting better. Interest mm-hmm, rates were low.
Yep.
Money was cheap.
Yep.
Housing just kept going up.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market kept going up.
Yep.
It was just, and it was, I suppose my ignorance is I just thought I was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I touched, it was working.
Yep.
And then COVID hit and that was incredibly hard for me because I lost connection with people. I lost the ability to have impact with a lot of people.
Yep.
Obviously, financially, it was incredibly difficult for us. For 2 years, we didn't make any money.
Yep.
So the lessons that I learned through that time
mm-hmm,
has drastically changed the person who I am personally and professionally moving forward.
How so? Give us an example of how that...
Personally, I take a lot less for granted. I'm a lot more grateful for the opportunities that I have to do things like this
mm-hmm,
because yep, this fills my cup up. I love connecting with
yep,
people. It's a big passion of mine. Business-wise, I don't take the risks that I used to take. I have safety nets. I understand that for no fault of my own, things can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have that lesson prior. So now I'm a lot more calculated
mm-hmm,
and a lot more risk-averse than what I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're the two big ones.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that I'll put a word on it. I'm not sure that's what you're feeling, but almost invincible. Look at everything that I'm doing because there are other influences that are helping me on that journey. And then all of a sudden it's like hit with a 4x4 and then the choices you think are available. How do you navigate a 2-year period without revenue?
Incredibly slowly.
Yeah.
Every decision that I made was very calculated. I think something that I'm most proud of is that we didn't lose a single employee for those 2 years. So we kept on everyone. We didn't know how long it was going to last, but that was something that we vowed to do. We wanted to keep our coaches on at our gym.
Yep.
We had a staff member look after the lodge for the whole time, flipping mattresses and stuff
yep,
like that.
Yep.
So that's something I'm incredibly proud of. How I dealt with it is probably something that I look back at and wish I could have my time again. personally, because I didn't deal with it great.
Yeah.
My mental wellness was definitely at an all-time low.
Yeah.
And that's something that I wish I could have a redo on. So,
Did you compensate for that in other ways? Were you putting more emphasis on your physical well-being or on the little impact you could have elsewhere? What did you do to offset the mental impact?
Honestly, I almost, to a degree, just shut off a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So I probably suppressed a lot.
Yep.
I'm very active. So my training went through the roof. Right. Because I thought I could just bury it with training, you know, mm-hmm. the emotional side of it.
Yeah.
I studied. Yeah. So like
where you did your counseling training?
Yeah. So that's where I started. That was something. Yeah. It's a multitude of things. And like I said, I don't want to speak about it, but I don't want to act like I had it right.
Figured out.
Yeah. Because I didn't. I was a mess and I didn't know what I was doing at the time, and I was blind and I was going between this thing and that thing. So in hindsight, I've learned lots of lessons, mm-hmm. but only from doing the wrong things. Right. I didn't have the right tools in my tool belt mm-hmm. when COVID hit. I wasn't ready for it.
Right. I don't think any of us were. Yeah. I remember having a personal commitment very similar. I didn't want to lose any of my employees, the team that turn up every day and give their best. My commitment was, in a world that was falling apart, for people like my team, family members were losing jobs, colleagues were losing jobs, and my commitment was, okay, we're going to find a way to get through this. Don't know how, don't know when, but that I used as motivation every single day to connect with people. Can you think of a moment in that recovery period or post-personal impact
mm-hmm.
prior to recovery? Was there a realization or was there something that triggered you to the compensation you were putting in place?
I think it was my wife.
Yeah,
she saw it in me before I did.
And right.
She said to me, you're not the person that you were going through that. You know, that's quite right. hard for me to say out loud. But yep. she was the one that recognized it. Mm-hmm. And I think I was a little bit blinded to it. So I think I had to thank my wife for that. She was the one that saw it from the outside.
Yep.
And then that's what allowed me to then address it.
And what did you do differently from that moment?
So then I looked at my core values, what I enjoy.
Yeah.
So once I understood, the things I value the most is impact on people, mm-hmm. connection, mm-hmm. learning. So I mm-hmm. love to learn and I love experiences. Mm. So what I did in 2022 is I made a list at the start of the year of mm-hmm. everything that I felt that I didn't have the ability to do for the last 2 years.
Right.
And in 2022, I've posted this on my social media and stuff, that I had a list of things that I wanted to achieve mm-hmm. and I went through and I made sure that I got all of them. And that was me finding me again. I found what I remember. Yep. I proved to myself I'm capable of really hard things.
Yeah.
I found connection with people, had mm-hmm. impact on more people than I could ever have imagined. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the turning point. 2022, what I achieved in that year is the turning point.
Yeah, as I reflect through that period, I really struggled with the term social distancing. I tried to get the team focused on physical distancing, and we would talk about that, but that just gave us an opportunity to connect in a different way. And so we were very real and raw. People saw all of us going through. We had a weekly call, and I checked in with every single person in the business, sat on the call, and I gave them opportunities to ask us questions, connect with us in a way that we wouldn't do if we were in the normal way of doing business. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the things that you take a stand for. It doesn't mean we have to do everything the way we've done it, despite what happens. How do you apply that in the journey that you've got?
Sorry, before we answer that, I've never heard that physical distancing versus social distancing.
Mm.
And I wish I did hear that, because that's a massive difference, those words.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard that before, and I wish I did. And I completely forgot what you asked me after that, because I was so stuck on hearing that and thinking, that is incredible.
Well, and it came out of me thinking, connection is so important.
Mm.
I'm doing this for people. And it was just a small change. I'm like, guys, we're talking about physical distancing.
Mm.
That's not disconnecting from people. And so the question then became, how do you use that connection level in the way that you help people improve or have your impact?
So I suppose going back to before, when I was saying it, like I measure my happiness through that,
mm.
what I get from seeing the impact that I have on other people is, for a lack of a better word, joy, fulfillment, happiness, you know, yeah. like these are things that come front of mind when I think about me helping someone else. Mm-hmm. I feel proud of myself, you know, for being able to help. So they're the things that jump out at me when you ask that question is what do I get out of it? All of that. That is what I want to do with my entire life and have always been like that as well.
So that must mean that there's a ways that you celebrate wins that help your clients feel good. Do you celebrate your own wins? You've done some amazing physical challenges. Scares me even thinking about the stuff that you do. Give us an insight about how you use that as a tool on your journey as well.
So some of the physical and I suppose sporting achievements that I've had, I always thought for a long time that I was doing it to prove to myself that I was capable and prove that I'm able to do hard things. And it wasn't until recently that where I actually heard another lady say it and I've taken it on a lot was she said, "I'm enough, but I'm not done." And when I heard that, I thought, that's incredible because I've proven to myself that I'm capable of very hard things, the ultra marathons, and but I'm not done yet. I want to continue doing these things. Mm. And when I had that shift, that mentality shift of, okay, I'm not doing this to prove to myself anymore or prove to anyone else. Mm. I'm doing this because I'm not done. I've got more in me. Yeah. I've got more business in me. I've got more impact that I can give to people. There's some big audacious goals that are like this year that I've set that I'm chasing. Mm-hmm. And it's not to prove anything to myself. And I don't have to go longer or faster or bigger or more expensive, but I'm not done yet. There's still some there for me.
So a massive commitment to your own well-being, a massive commitment to impact with your clients. How do you balance the two? And the third element, the family, you mentioned your family is very important.
Yeah.
How do you balance those three elements?
Thankfully, they all supplement each other. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is when I do these big events, so say for example, in 8 weeks, I go to Morocco, I'm running the Sahara Desert, 252 kilometers through the Sahara Desert.
I'm sweating thinking about it.
What that does is that allows me to be the best person that I can be. There's for multiple different reasons. I'm driven. I make good decisions. So my food's good. My sleep's good. These are all byproducts of this goal. And what that does, that allows me to show up as a really good husband. So although we might not have the most amount of time together, because on a Sunday morning I might be running for 5 or 6 hours, the time that we do have together, I'm the best version of myself, so then we can have really good quality time together. On top of that, having a very understanding wife is imperative. Uh-huh. And my wife doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for the business accolades that we've had. And also she's an athlete as well. So she competed at the CrossFit Games.
Okay.
And so she understands that side of it. And that's a big part as well.
Right.
And how I juggle it is these are things that I feel very grateful that I get to do. So mm-hmm. I feel very grateful that I have my own business.
Yeah.
I feel very grateful that I've got the ability to do these challenges that I set for myself. And I'm more than grateful that my wife sticks with me through all of this. You know, she's very understanding.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that answered the question.
Absolutely. Because it's an entrepreneurial challenge, right? I mean, I've talked with a few guests now and there's a common theme that is finding that balance, having the tools in the toolkit. You mentioned it earlier. It's knowing and being able to balance, even if it's a client needs me at 11 o'clock at night. So it's finding that way to, I guess, be fully immersed in each of those elements when that's available.
And I think something that's changed for me was I thought if I just spent more time with my wife that our relationship would be better, mm-hmm. which is not the case. Because if I'm spending more time with my wife and not growing personally and not fulfilling my needs, then I'm not the best version of myself when I spend time with my wife. So I work with a lot of parents,
yep.
and there's mum guilt and dad guilt taking mm-hmm. away time from their kids. And something that I get them to try understand is that when you do take that time away from your kids, if you're hungover on a Sunday morning and you just put your kids on an iPad, that's different. That's not taking time for your own growth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're taking time out on a Sunday morning to go and better yourself, whether it's education, whether it's your side hustle business, whether it's a physical challenge, whatever that is, that's you making yourself a better parent. So when you show up to your kids, they look up to you and they admire the things that you're capable of. I used to think taking that time away from the kids was selfish. Now I think it's very selfless to do that, because you have to do these things. You cannot let these things slip by, because then you end up resenting the time. Yeah. You end up looking at other avenues where you...
And it almost becomes forced in a way that impacts the ability to have quality time.
I think structure creates a lot of freedom as well. And that's sort of carried to it in itself. But structure around the way that you do your business, your personal growth, your family, the more structure you have around that, the more it allows to have good quality time as well.
Do you think back on the journey of failure to success, or failure to learn, called flirting by some people? Do you think about that journey and how it all fits together to this point?
I like the term failure, and I think the first time we ever spoke, I said I really like the name of your podcast.
Yeah,
I think it's something that people shy away from.
Yeah.
And that we are scared to admit maybe there's failure. Mm-hmm. I think the more that people speak about that, the better. Mm-hmm. And that was why when we spoke for the first time, I was like, I love the name of your podcast. It's the best. Put it out there. Because some people will say, like, I'll either win or learn. And it's okay to fail at things.
Absolutely.
And so I definitely look at that, and I definitely look at my failures in the past. I think more important is I look at some of the key happiness points in my past, and I put them in my future. So I look back at my life and I think, when was I my most happy, and what was I doing there? Was I traveling? Was I with friends? You know, and what emotions did I feel then? And then what I do is I take that and I put it in the future, and I try and mimic that, because I've got evidence that it made me happy in the past. Yes. And then I can replicate that. So not only learn from the failures, but I think what people don't do is they don't really highlight what part of your life were you absolute happiest, what were the emotions you felt, who were you with. Take that, put that in your future. That's what we're working towards. That's our new big outcome goal. And I think that's very important to do.
And that comes from failure moments too, right? Mm-hmm. Because we talked about the recovery process. You had an opportunity to connect with your wife in a way that she woke you up to getting back to that point of happiness.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, fascinating. A lot of what we talked about is that your entire focus is physical well-being for you, mental well-being for you, mm-hmm. and impact on clients. What sort of eye-opening experience have you seen in your clients where they've been blocked or stuck, or and you've opened them to possibility, or opened to as a result of a similar experience or a failure you've had that has helped them transform the quality of their life? Because that's what you're talking about. You've helped clients transform the quality of their life.
I think
people... And at only 35, you don't have that many learned experiences except the intensity of those experiences.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I like the way that you put that, because at 35 years of age, I think the learned experiences probably are less, but they are very... there's a very high intensity, because I do seek adversity. I do seek suffering on some of the achievements that I've done with a longer distance, I suppose, athletic achievements. Mm-hmm. So the intensity of my learning is quite high, which I've never heard that put like that. And I think with clients, understanding that they're not entirely unique is the first step. That having these blockages and barriers and crossroads is normal. It's human that everyone has these. That's first. I think when people come to a realization that, and I didn't think that was the case initially until I learned that, the more I spoke to people about failure, the more I spoke to people about having these feelings of self-limiting beliefs or barriers, it's normal. That's not abnormal. Mm-hmm. I think that's step number one. So to having a big transformation. I think step number two is the arrival fallacy. That's a massive one. People think that once they've achieved X goal that they're going to have happiness everlasting. It's not the case, no matter what you think that is, whether it's, you know, the big five, you know, money, material, status, fame, whatever it is, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So understanding the arrival fallacy, for me, I thought once I achieve representing my country in a sport, then I'll be happy. And I wasn't.
Right.
And then I did it. I represented my state in a different sport. I wasn't happy. I went, you know, with my running, I just kept going longer and longer and longer. And that I thought was going to make me, it never did.
Right.
So I think people understanding that is a massive one as well.
So let's shift the focus a little bit now. We've talked about your motivations, impact, etc. How do you manage the business to make sure it gives you the financial resources to deliver your impact?
Mm-hmm. I think we touched on it briefly before. I've never got into any of the businesses that I've built out of a financial motivation. Never had that. I think what happens is, and this is my opinion here, is that unhappiness in business comes from when your expectations or your wants aren't meeting your expectations. For me, I've very grateful that I've probably earned more money than I thought I was ever capable of earning. So my expectations have been blown out of the water. So for me, that made it very easy then to concentrate on my passion. And I think that went hand in hand, and that was a very good lesson for me, is the more I concentrated on what I was passionate about, the finances was a byproduct. One of my core values isn't to be financially as in the best position that I've ever got. I don't want more and more and more money. It's never given me fulfillment. But a byproduct of following my passion was that I made more money than I ever thought I was capable of. And I've stuck by that. I have it tattooed on my wrist as a reminder, because it's proven and I have evidence in my life that when I do something I'm passionate about, the byproduct of that is that I'm financially stable.
And so what advice can you give entrepreneurs that are perhaps compromising their own well-being for the well-being of others? What advice or tips do you have to help entrepreneurs out there who are facing the struggle?
Definitely goes case by case. There's not a blanket response to that that's going to fit everyone.
Yep.
I think understanding the importance of you being the best version of yourself, right? Like the saying, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. Mm-hmm. When you're the best version of yourself, your business, the impact, the value that you'll create will be significantly more. It's a lot easier said than done to concentrate on yourself. But I think, and I don't want to give too much of a blanket answer here because it is very personalized, but I think people understanding what is their true intrinsic motivation they want, not what they've absorbed from the outside and what they think that they should be working towards, but their intrinsic motivation, understanding that, then it helps you work on yourself because you know you have a clear defined path on what you want and what makes you happy. I think when you start building a business for the exit, and if that doesn't align with your core values and all you want to do is build impact and value and all you're thinking about is the exit point, that's when people typically put that before themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And although financial success is not necessarily your driver, do you use key metrics around the finances of the business to help you manage? How do you do the financial elements now? Do you rely on experts who that's their focus and passion?
I think for me, I treat finances as seasons in my business.
Right.
So at the moment, for example, in my new business, finance isn't a main goal in my business at the moment. Now, when I'm exiting a business, it is that season of that business, it becomes the most important thing.
Yep.
At the moment where I'm in a building phase or a building season, finances aren't a key element that I'm tracking.
Right.
So I'm looking at personal brand, I'm looking at awareness, I'm looking at opportunity. These are the things that I'm concentrating on. If I'm looking at exiting a business, finances, that's finance season. You know, that's when I'm concentrating on. I've from a very early age, have outsourced a lot of our bookkeeping, a lot of our accounting, for the simple fact that when I look at it and I knew it didn't, nothing on that paper really resonated with me, good, bad, indifferent. It's not something I absorb well, so I outsource that. That's not something I look at. I look at building impact and value, and then the finances, I give those to the professionals.
I'm sure we've got some people out there who are listening to the story of being them best selves. What's their first step?
Reflection. I think if I could give one takeaway from today, reflect on your life. Reflect on when you were the happiest. Reflect on what that looked like, where you were, what you were doing, who you were with. A really good tool that I have is just if you start a line, you can close your eyes when you do this. Put a pen on a paper and draw a line and just go up when you feel happy and down when you feel sad. And just going from start at zero, you know, and were you told that you're a happy baby or did you cry all the time and
that?
And then just go into today. Then have a look on that paper and look at the highest points from when you were zero to the age you are now. And then remember as much as you possibly can about that. Reflect on your past. Use that as evidence. You know that that's what happened that made you happy. That's where you were aligned with your core values. Let's talk about that in the future. How do we implement that into our future? So first step I would recommend for anyone is reflect on your life. There's evidence there. There's lessons there. Yeah. We can pull that. We can use that. Don't just think that it's in the past.
Yeah. You've used that word a lot, and it's resonated for me, is that look for evidence of what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. There is evidence. We've all had those moments.
Yeah.
Fascinating discussion. If people wanted to find you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Best way is LinkedIn. So just my personal LinkedIn, Sean Cousins, or my website, Sondervale, S-O-N-D-E-R-V-A-I-L, a bit of an odd one.
Yeah. Where did that name come from?
Sonder means walking down the street, and everyone has their own story.
Yeah.
So that's a brief explanation. And Vale, V-A-I-L, is when you tip your hat.
Right.
So walking down the street, everyone has their own stories, but just paying homage to everyone having their own stories. That's Sondervale.
Well, I appreciate the conversation. You've certainly given me some things to think about, and I'm going to go back and think about those moments and what evidence do I have that made me really happy.
Good, I'm glad.
Thank you for joining me today, and thank you all for listening. Please remember to leave a review and subscribe for new episodes and content.